Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor. We've got loads of football to talk about in this episode. Later on, Mike Innes is going to catch you up on two match days from J3 in J-Talk Short Corner. Before that, there's a lot of J2 to talk about, and bringing the noise this week is John Steele. Hi John, how are you?
Hi James, very well, thanks. I'll try and bring as much news as I can. There's more football than we could shake a stick at over the past 7 days, so we better get into it.
Yes, let's. And we're going to start with match day 5, which took place on Wednesday the 20th. And there was a meeting of two historical powerhouses, I suppose you could say. Jeff United against Shimizu S-Pulse. This one finished 3-1 to Shimizu. A few late goals and a massive crowd. It looked like a pretty fun game.
We often use the phrase like a good advert for the J League or a good advert for J2 specifically, mm-hmm. with the division that we're concerned with, and I think this game definitely ticked the boxes, didn't it? Yeah, really, really full stadium. I think it was pretty much sold out or close to. Obviously Wednesday was a public holiday, national holiday in Japan, so that's why all these games took place in the afternoon and still had pretty good crowds up and down the country, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this game in particular stood out. As you mentioned, it's a clash of two original 10 teams, powerhouse teams. I think last season, Shimizu hosted, in inverted commas, Jeff, at the National Stadium, didn't they? Cockpit Scud, yeah. And that had like 50,000 plus. So this is a fixture which does produce big crowds historically in the last few seasons. The reason I wanted to talk about this game was, as you mentioned, it was 1-1 going into the last 10 minutes, mm-hmm. when Shimizu kind of ran away with it with a couple of late goals. Their second goal with about 10 minutes from Takashi Inoue was an absolute cracker.
Yeah.
A real kind of arrow right into the top corner. The goalkeeper had no chance. And then Kai Matsuzaki kind of swept in a third late on. And I think that's possibly instructive, because I think last season it's the kind of game that Shimizu might not have won. If you think back to the playoff final, for example, against Tokyo Verdy, where they just needed a goal from anywhere and it would have got them into J1 for this year, and they just couldn't find a way through. They kept going here, they kept plugging away. I think they were the strongest side for most of the game, especially in the second half, and they deserved to get those two late goals to take them over the line. So it wasn't quite a 3-1 hammering of Jeff. You know, Jeff are a very competitive team, as we know, and I think any side that has Hiro Komori up front is always going to be dangerous. I think he scored in this game. That was his fourth league game in a row, right? Four in four games for him. So he's carrying on the great form from last season. But I thought it was an impressive win from Shimizu. On Shimizu in general, I mean, this is Wednesday's game was their fourth win from the first five rounds, but I don't think they've really hit top gear. They've not really been that impressive. So I think possibly that last kind of 10 or 15 minutes of Jeff might be as well, the best they played this year. So they'll be looking to replicate that going forward. But it felt like a game that might sort of peter out into a 1-1 draw, and Shimizu might have settled for the point. But they went for it, and they got the 3 points with those cracking late goals. And I think that might be possibly ominous for the rest of the division going forward. We'll wait and see. But what did you think, James?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that all the goals were late in this. So it was a 44th minute and then first half stoppage time, and then 80th and then 91st minute. Just a kind of quirky little aspect of the game. But it seems Shimizu just have a little bit more than Jeff, and that's what enabled them to get those late goals and win. They seem to have carried on fairly seamlessly from last year in terms of their effectiveness in attack and their ability to produce moments like that Inoue goal. He scores two or three pretty good goals every year, it seems, and that was another one. And I think it was their following game, Akita. There was a photo going around on Twitter of someone on the bench holding up like a piece of A4 paper with power written on it. And I thought it was pretty funny. But they do indeed have power. And that's what got them over the line here. For Jeff, A couple of interesting things. Yeah, Hiro Komori, he's got 4 goals in 7 games, league games. He had a similar strong start last year. He scored 6 in the first 6 or something like that, or 6 in the first 7. He had a really good start to last year. Mm. And so I would not be surprised if other clubs are, I mean, I'm sure they're already very interested in him, but Jeff may find it harder to keep hold of him. And what also interested me was Jeff changing goalie.
He didn't do very well on the first goal either, did he?
Yeah, well, this the manager did this last year, didn't he? Shota Arai started as the number one last year and had a few dodgy moments, and then was replaced by Suzuki, who was very good. And in this season, Fujita got the start at the beginning of the year and has had a few dodgy moments, and so the manager swapped with Suzuki, and yeah, not great in this game, but I'd be interested to see whether making the goalie change again this season, as he did last year, has any kind of positive impact on their performances, because they've had, while not as bad a start as last year, they have had a slightly inconsistent start. Jeff, 2 wins, a draw, and 3 losses, which it's not bad. They're in 11th after 6 games, but it's when I think a lot of us were kind of expecting them to carry on from where they left off last year. They had that amazing second half of the season, and they haven't continued that. But
very inconsistent so far now.
A team that's not inconsistent though, Fagiano Okayama. They won 1-0 at home to Mito Hollyhock back on Wednesday the 20th. Seemed fairly comfortable for them. They're still unbeaten. They haven't lost, in fact, this season. And they are top, just ahead of Shimizu. What did you think about this Okayama 1, Mito 0?
Full disclosure, I only saw the highlights of this game. So I think you can perhaps add a bit more info, James. I think you watched the full game, so you can maybe say more. I don't have much to say. It was a good Okayama have made a good, very brisk and businesslike start, and I think that was pretty much continued. I think once that they'd scored that penalty from Gleason, who I think has slotted in really well up front, has provided some goals and assists already, so that they haven't really missed any of the forwards that left in the winter. Once they'd gone in front, I don't think Mito really threatened to get back into the game, and it was a fairly comfortable Okayama win. I think one thing they have in common with Shimizu, and we can perhaps compare them because they're the top two at the moment, right, after the first few games, is I don't think they've battered anybody yet.
No,
They haven't thrashed anybody. I mean, obviously, Kofu had a 5-1 win at Tokushima, and Iwaki had a 6-0 at Kumamoto. But Okayama, Shimizu, they're the top two. You know, they're in the automatic promotion places at the moment, but they haven't sort of thrashed anybody. I don't think that's Okayama's style. I think they do tend to get in front and then kind of throttle the game, you know, and kill the game. And there's not that many teams in J2 who can do that, so it's quite impressive to see them do it against Mito. I don't think they will sell too many DVDs of this game in the club shop, but Mito can be a dangerous opponent. And yeah, Okayama have made, I mean, we sort of talked about them as being a potential sort of fringe playoff team in pre-season, but at the moment they're making it look very easy, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Mike made an interesting comment in our group chat that we have. And he said he was watching the following game, the one Okayama won 2-1 away to Gunma with a late winner. And he said he was watching the highlights, and Okayama were playing like a team that's fully in control and supremely confident that they will be able to win the game. no matter if it's late on. And that reminded me of Machida last year and Niigata the year before. Machida last year, of course, they had the money bags. Mm. But they played as if they knew that they had the quality and the belief that they would be able to score late goals. Whereas Niigata the year before were very much a team that could control a game from the start and then, yeah, like you, mm. you said just now, throttle a team, and then mm. they knew that they was basically going to outlast the opponents, and they mm. scored quite a few late goals, I think, in their promotion year. In this game, yeah, Okayama controlled it fairly comfortably. I think maybe concerned that they only scored one goal and it was only a penalty. But you know, that's all you need. If you keep a clean sheet, then fine. They've not been a particularly free scoring team this year, but they are controlling games, so mm-hmm. maybe they don't need to worry too much about their goal scoring just yet.
Good point about the late goals. I think this is a stat that I researched myself, so it might not be 100% quotable for academic papers, but I think Okayama scored 3 times in second half stoppage time already this season mm-hmm. in 6 games, and I think they got another game, they got an 84th minute winner. Mm-hmm. So like you said, I think the word that came into my mind listening to you speaking there, James, was composure. They don't panic. Yeah. I mean, against Gunma at the weekend, we're jumping ahead, but you know they conceded a pretty hilarious own goal and were behind. But then they just kept going. They kept plugging away. They levelled. Then they went in front, and then and that was an injury time winner again as well. Yeah. So they were able to just, you know, they seem quite unflappable at the moment. Mm. So that will stand them in good stead. You know, as the season goes on, I think.
Yeah, and they were able to hold Mito at arm's length here, really. They weren't really troubled by Mito at all, and that's a concern for Mito because they're not scoring enough. They seem to be relying far too much on Mizuki Ando. He can't do it all, and everyone else has just been anonymous. They haven't won since the opening day, and that includes a loss in the cup to YSCC. So something needs to. They need something to act as a catalyst for their attack and for their season. Really, they're only 6 games in, but you know, you don't want to get stuck in a rut that you right at the start and not be able to get out of it, because it's going to be a very long year otherwise.
That sounds like experience talking, James. Mm.
Bitter experience. Speaking of bitter experiences, let's move on to match day 6. A game that, well, it was not a bitter experience for you and for other Yokohama FC supporters, as they won 4-0 in the very heavy rain down in Kagoshima. This was just a nightmare for Kagoshima, wasn't it?
Yeah, it almost... we're in the kind of Simpsons gif of Nelson Muntz saying, stop, stop, he's already dead. because it was actually... It went so horribly wrong for Kagoshima early on in this game that you actually felt a bit sorry for them. Mm. But before we talk about the game, I just got to give props to the fans of both teams who had to endure. I don't think it was cold. Obviously, Kagoshima, Kyushu, southern part of Japan, a bit warmer than our regions. James, I think it was about 20 degrees at kickoff, so it was not cold at all. It was short sleeve weather, but the rain was absolutely relentless and it just battered down. I think it even got heavier, you know, towards but the last 20 minutes. It was, you know, sort of water polo esque, you know, that the pitch was getting really kind of bogged down. So yeah, fair play to all the supporters who had to endure that, perhaps especially the Kagoshima ones, who, as you mentioned, just witnessed a sort of Halloween horror show in late March. Yokohama were a lot more aggressive and on the front foot than they have been so far this season, and they scored in just the 3rd minute through Sho Ito. He was unmarked in the penalty area to kind of first time across from Toyamane into the back of the net, and things got very very worse. Things got even worse for Kagoshima midway through the half when they had their goalkeeper Ryota Izumori sent off. I think he's looked a bit dodgy all season, to be honest. And he sort of came off his line to try and close down or clear, and he made, I think we can say it was very minimal contact with Keiji Ogawa, Yokohama FC attacker. I think it was a foul, and the goalkeeper was the last man, so there could be some arguments about, you know, Ogawa's in a wide position, so maybe it could only be a yellow card, but it was so clumsy and harebrained that I don't think Izumori can really argue with the red card. So you're 1-0 down and you've had your goalkeeper sent off. Cholwan Ono came on as the substitute goalkeeper, and very soon he was faced with trying to save a penalty. Ryo Toyama brought down Toyama inside the box, and he got a second yellow card for that. So Kagoshima were down to 9, and then Ito scored the penalty, and it was pretty much game over, you know, after about 35 minutes. On Toyama's card, his second yellow card, by the way, he's kind of tangled with Yaman inside the box and brought him down. His first yellow card was for a really stupid, like, off the ball block in about the 5th minute, and it was his very first foul of the game, so perhaps he was a bit unlucky to get a card in that sense, but otherwise so stupid to make that kind of tackle sort of in the middle of the pitch where it's not necessary. So he paid a heavy price for that. Before half time, Caprini headed in a third goal, and in the second half there was some redemption for Solomon Sakuragawa. You remember he missed the penalty back in round 2 away at Oita, but this time he was bundled over in the box late on, and he immediately went to pick up the ball and scored. So he really enjoyed that. And yeah, but to be honest, from a Yokohama FC point of view, playing against 9 men for so long, perhaps the only disappointment is we didn't get more goals. But yeah, winning 4-0, Yokohama FC, not a high scoring team, and usually not a relaxing watch. So this was quite a nice change of pace. On Kagoshima, you mentioned earlier talking about Mito, it's early days still, 6 games in. I think that's true, but some of Kagoshima's defending, even when it was 11 versus 11, was awful in this game. They were not marking very well, even in the 3rd minute when Yokohama FC got in front. The incident that led to the first red card was just a simple ball into their kind of right hand channel, you know, over the back of a very, very high but very static back four. And the penalty incident was exactly the same. This time it was a ball in behind in the opposite, the left hand channel. And again, the defence was too high up. They were too flat-footed. And, you know, Yokohama FC had got players in behind and they were in trouble. I think for a while, I can't remember who they played against, but last time Kagoshima were in J2, they got beat 6-0 quite near the end of the season. And it was some of the worst kind of can't-be-arsed defending I think I've ever seen. And that is my... What's the opposite of the gold standard? Like the brown standard for like poor defending? Like whenever I see bad defending... I'm like, is it as bad as that Kagoshima game? And it's early days, and Kagoshima actually started okay this year, but the defending in this game, and they got beat 3-0 at Oita, didn't they? The week before, in midweek, and just some of that defending just wasn't really J2 appropriate. And I think they're going to have to sort that out very quickly, otherwise... I think they've got the worst defence in division statistically. They've let in 14 in the 6 games they've had. I know they obviously playing for 9 men in this game was unhelpful for that. But yeah, worst defence statistically so far, and they will have to improve on that. Otherwise, they're going to be quite near that bottom three, I feel. What do you think, James? I talked for a long time there.
Yeah, well, you should enjoy it. Yeah, well, playing with 9 men is unhelpful, but it's their own fault. So, you know, like...
That's a dad. If anyone wasn't sure if you were a dad, that'll have confirmed it. That was parent.
If you don't want to struggle with 9 men, don't have 2 men sent off. Don't commit.
Yeah. What are you going to do next time?
Yeah. Have you learned your lesson? We'll find out if they've learned their lesson in a few days. But yeah, nightmare start. I mean, that was awful defending in the 3rd minute. How can you switch off so early or not have even switched on? Just beggars belief. Yeah, down to 9 men after 33 minutes. There's absolutely no chance they were going to get anything from that game. But they did continue to fight valiantly. They did try to get forward. They did try to get back into the game. So I'll give them some credit for that. And those two sendings off, those were, fouls. I think partly it was down to their bad defending, but also down to Yokohama's good play, good attacking play, putting balls in the right the right places to cause them problems. It worked. So I think when we talked about Yokohama FC a week or two ago, and we were a bit miserable, I suppose, a bit concerned about the attack. And we obviously fought four goals against a very depleted opponent is perhaps misleading. But on the other hand, it's four goals away. That's nice. So we also mentioned before when we talked about them, Toyamane has not really had much end product shooting or crossing, but he was quite involved in this, I thought, in a positive way. And I think Solomon Sakuragawa and probably all Yokohama FC supporters will be very relieved that he scored that penalty, and will be hoping that that is the start of a good run of scoring for him, because he struggled for much of last year. And yeah, that miss a few weeks ago as well. I think there was good news in terms of attack for Yokohama FC as well. They've made a signing as well. They've signed Toshiki Takahashi. Is it from Urawa?
Yeah.
Is that a loan?
Yes.
Yeah, because he's been very, very good. He had, what was it, two years at Kumamoto in J3, where he scored 9 goals and 8 goals. And then he scored 14 goals in their first year back in J2, which earned him the move to Urawa. And I think he was injured for part of last year or something. So I think if that's the case, he's got something to prove, and he'll want to get, you know, back to scoring and playing a lot, and that's only going to be a good thing for Yokohama, I think.
Apparently his nickname is Carlos. Did you know this, James?
Why is that?
I got sucked into clicking a link earlier, because I knew that he'd signed, but the I saw a tweet which was like Carlos training with Yokohama FC and I was like, oh, what's this? And then it just, at the end of this, like, very long-winded, well, it was about three paragraphs, by my standards, long-winded, but it was, oh, by the way, it's Toshiki Takahashi, his nickname's Carlos. So where that comes from, I've got no idea. But yeah, interesting trivia.
I think it's good. Actually, it'd be good if we don't know. I quite like it when you get these kind of weird nicknames and don't understand why. Which takes me back to our conversation about cricketers' nicknames a few weeks ago, and No Pants and stuff like that. But that's Joe Denley, by the way. Let's move on. One more game to talk about from the weekend. Tochigi 2, Oita 1. Oita dominated this game, and all they had to show for it was a stoppage time penalty. And they could have, in fact, lost by more. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, again, full disclosure, I just saw the highlights this afternoon while I was skulking around a coffee shop near my house. But I think Tochigi, they were sort of efficient and quietly impressive in beating Yokohama FC a couple of games ago. And Sean Carroll, a friend of the pod, was at that game against Tochigi against Yokohama FC, and he was impressed with Tochigi, I think, as well. They were a lot better than I think either of us had expected before the season started. I think this game really got going in the second half. Quite a fortunate opener for Tochigi. I think Ryotaro Ishida put in a shot that took a massive deflection on its way through. I think, again, we're back in John football. That might have to be an own goal, but Ryotaro Ishida can have it. It was nice to see Koya Okada like racing clear.
Yeah.
To score the second. I know he's a player that you like, and me too, I think. And of course, once it was 2-0, I think Oita did sort of, you know, their goose was cooked a little bit, wasn't it? Maybe a big moment was at 1-0 when Atsuki Satsukawa hit the post for Oita. I think if they perhaps levelled, then the game would have been back in the balance, sort of going into the last 20 minutes or so. And they got a penalty right at the end, didn't they? Shun Nagasawa. scored it, but that just ended up being a consolation. So I think, yeah, definitely a case of a missed chances for Oita. But yeah, suddenly Tochigiya 8th, they got 3 wins in 4, and yeah, the table looks, it is quite nice reading for Tochigiya supporters at the moment, which I don't think we really expected them to have, you know, be an 8th after 6 rounds. Okada should have probably scored again, shouldn't he? He got to go clean through again, and he was a bit overconfident with that one, so we'll have to perhaps put him on. He needs a bit more shooting practice before he can be a Most Bravo player. But yeah, really, really good win for Tochigi, and you know, every win that Tochigi get is a good one, I think. But yeah, they had to ride their luck, just like they did against Yokohama FC a couple of weeks previously. But they sort of seem to know how much they can ride their luck and then sort of hit teams a little bit on the counter or on the break. I don't know. What about you, James?
Yeah, they're having a good time at the moment. I just looked at the table. We've got Iwaki, Tochigi and Yamaguchi are 7th, 8th and 9th. Not 17th, 18th and 19th, as I expect many people would have assumed them to be. So that's quite interesting. Yeah, this game, in the first half, it was all Oita. In the end, they had 65% possession. And it was 67% at the end of the first half. And they particularly tried to attack down the right. But Tochigi defended really, really solidly. Especially on that on their left side, Sho, Omori, Takumi, Fujitani, and Koki Oshima worked really hard defending down that side. Oita couldn't really create anything from it, and they kept having to go. They had a bit more success attacking down their left, but you know, they didn't have anything to show for it. Arata Watanabe was their captain on the day. He was very influential for Oita, but his finishing and the team's finishing in general wasn't good enough. And once again, Oita looked unable to break down stubborn opponents. So you've got to wonder what is the key, or who is the key? Who have they got that is going to be able to do that? Because at the moment, no one's really kind of stepping forward and showing that they can do it. Whereas for Tochigi, they had a lot of players who looked like they can make a difference. So Ishida, okay, his goal was massively deflected, but he played really well. And yeah, Koya Okuda, I do like him. Partly the reason I like him is because he just looks really gormless. But he's a really good player. I think he's very maybe underrated or overlooked, underestimated. In this game and in general, he plays really well, just behind the striker, and he's very good at finding spaces and picking a pass and stuff. And something what we had him at Kanazawa last year, something I wanted him to shoot more. He'd get into good positions, but then he'd try and find a pass, and so I wanted him to shoot more. And so I was pleased to see him score. It was a good finish. I thought he'd messed it up, letting the ball run too far away from him, but somehow the keeper didn't get there in time. And then he had, yeah, identical chance a few minutes later, but put it just past the post, which was a shame for him, but yeah, it didn't matter. Tochigi, yeah, they played really well. They did, I think, might be fair to say this was a very Tochigi performance. Like they defended really well, and they struck when they could, and they held on fairly comfortably actually in the end. And yeah, up in 8th, this is good. It's very exciting, and hope they can keep it up, because it's nice to see some different teams bothering the playoffs for a change. Bothering's not the word. Anyway, Let's move on to Most Bravo player, shall we? We had two rounds of fixtures, so I thought there were quite a few players worthy of honourable mentions. But you can go first. Who caught your eye over the last week?
Yes, the old hospital pass for most Bravo player. Yeah, okay, fair enough, James. Honourable mentions, I think I need to give a shout out to a grumpy target man, Juanma Delgado, because he scored on both Wednesday and Sunday important goals for Nagasaki, who we haven't mentioned on the pod this week, but are travelling quite nicely up at the top, aren't they? He got the winner with a kind of nice kind of daisy cutter from about 25 yards on Wednesday, and then he scored an important equaliser coming off the bench on Sunday for Nagasaki against Kofu. So I thought he had a really, really good week, and seems to be getting into gear after a fairly slow start to the season by the standards he set last year. I'm not sure if he's had any yellow cards yet. I have to check on that, but must have got at least one by now. I also want to give a shout out for, and you know, listeners who know my where my affiliations lie would probably be growing, is Akinori Ichikawa, Yokohama FC goalkeeper. He did really well to get a clean sheet for the team on Wednesday, obviously because Yokohama FC had to play with 10 men for most of that game against Gunma. He also kept a clean sheet on Sunday, but his job was slightly easier because obviously Kagoshima were a bit careless at the back and had a goalkeeper and a defender sent off early on. So two clean sheets in 5 days, not to be sneezed at, so I'll give him a shout out as well. But my MVP, my most Bravo player for round five and round six, is another goalkeeper, Akihiro Hayashi, at Sendai. And yeah, we've given him a hard time on the pod in the past, I think.
Yeah.
With good reason, because he was really poor for much of last season, and somehow is keeping Yuma Obata out of the Sendai team. But Sendai's last three results, James, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0. So he has three clean sheets in a row. Obviously, that includes Wednesday and Sunday. I also see that his stats say he has the best save percentage of shots from outside the box in J2. I think he's at 100%. Obviously, Sendai only conceded 2 goals in the first 6 games, so that helps with the stats. He's also got the second best saving percentage from shots inside the box. So he's made a really good start. He also made an absolutely fantastic one-handed save at close range in the game on Sunday. So I think he's a good shout, and it's continuing my policy of trying to sort of rehabilitate players that we've bullied on the pod in the past. So Akihiro Hayashi, great goalkeeping in the last few games from him. What about you?
Yeah, well, talking of goalkeepers, another 0-0 on the weekend anyway. Yamagata against Iwaki, both goalies in that game, Masaki Goto and Kotaro Ichikawa, were exceptional. It was not, I only saw the highlights. I wish I'd watched the whole game. It wasn't one of those drab 0-0s where both teams' attacks are hopeless. This was looked really entertaining. Lots of attacking play, lots of good chances, lots of spectacular saves. So those two goalies earn honourable mentions from me. Also, we just talked about him, Ryotaro Ishida of Tochigi. I thought he was very impressive for them. Going back to last Wednesday, for Nagasaki, Matias Jesus, again, another strong performance from him. I think he's going to be a contender for, you know, the best 11 at the end of the year, to be honest. But there were two players who impressed me across the two match days. So this was actually a really difficult decision. One of them is Gleison of Okayama, who got the goal against Mito. And he also, I think he got, if he didn't get two assists, he was heavily involved in the two goals in the 2-1 win against Gunma.
Oh, I think he got both assists, yeah.
Yeah, including a very good chest. He chested the ball down for Gabriel Xavier to score the winner in stoppage time. But my choice for most Bravo player this week is Henan of Yamaguchi, who... he got a goal and an assist in a win and a draw. And he has been quite influential in their attack so far this year, it seems. He's been popping up much further forward than he ever seems to have done previously for them, and to great effect. So, yeah, Henan's my choice for this year. Great. This week, rather.
Yeah. Great volley. Great volley from him, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, congratulations, Akihiro Hayashi and Hennan. You go into the Hall of Fame for this week at least. Now, we talked about Toshiki Takahashi joining Yokohama FC, but there have been a few other interesting transfers in the last couple of days. I'm assuming that the transfer window is ending sometime soon. I've no idea when it actually is. It's probably something I should have looked up before we started recording. Anyway, have there been any other sort of transfers that have stood out for you over the last couple of days?
Yeah, I think you're right. We must be nearing some kind of transfer deadline or end of the financial year situation, because there has been some movement, hasn't there, this week. I think one, obviously, you know, I watch Yokohama FC regularly, so Toshiki Takahashi is an exciting signing from my point of view. But there do seem to be forwards kind of on the move. Atsushi Kurokawa has joined Mito on loan from Machu de Zelvia. You mentioned that Mito are a bit short of firepower up front. Obviously, Kurokawa will be able to help with that. And he's played at Mito before, of course, earlier in his career. So he'll be familiar with the setup, you would imagine. So Atsushi Kurokawa going on loan to Mito is an interesting one. Manato Shinada, who was quite eye-catching at Kofu last season on loan from FC Tokyo, he's back in J2 on loan, but this time at Jeff Chiba. So again, I think it's an interesting signing because he's the type of player that they have a lot of already at Jeff. So it's interesting to kind of imagine where he might fit in that kind of quite a sort of crowded midfield and, you know, wide sort of attacking positions. But if you're able to bring in a player of his ability, I don't think you can say no if you're a J2 team. So yeah, I think that has the potential to be an interesting signing. And yeah, I'm just thinking about any more. Actually, I've just seen on Twitter, literally while we're talking, that I think Cristiano is leaving Kofu, isn't he? He's leaving Kofu to go back to Brazil, a team in the fourth tier. I don't think that's official, but that's the rumor. So Cristiano might be not long for the J League. Obviously, he's been an institution of the past, well, I was going to say decade. It must be close to that. At this point, so but have I missed any, James? There's a young forward from Nagasaki's gone into J3 at Matsumoto, is that right? But I can't remember his name, it's too long.
Serin Selian Diop,
that's the one.
Who I think he came into the first team in the second half of last year and scored a few, I think, and looks pretty good. So I think he's gone, just to get more experience and more game time. Kurokawa Tomito is interesting because my main memory of him is he was the key man in Omiya surviving in 2021. And then I think he went to, did he go to Iwata after that and barely played? And then he went back to Omiya on loan. And then he was at Machida as well, and he barely played for them.
Is it Kurokawa who failed a medical for a team in Poland?
I don't know.
I might be that might be libelous, so I'll double check that before we put this pod out. But yeah, I think pretty sure he failed a medical to go to a team in Poland at one point.
Right. But basically, what I'm thinking is that after he left Omiya, he barely played, and so he needs goals and Mito need goals that we talked about earlier. So this could be a very good thing for both parties. But the one that caught my eye is Thiago Alves. Not that one. Not the one who's just come back to Japan to join Tokyo Verde. The other one, who was at Okayama, has just come back from Brazil to join Tokushima on a full transfer. That could be a very good signing if Tokushima can get the rest of their attack sorted out. I mean, he's not gonna fix all their problems, but he's a very good player, so especially at this level, as we saw over the last couple of years for Okayama. So I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that like the J League must have at least some players called Thiago Alves. When they must have realised at the start of the season we didn't have any and had to quickly get two in, to fulfil some kind of quota.
It's a shame that they're not in the same division anymore.
Yeah, that's true. No more Thiago Alves derby. Well, for now.
For now, yeah.
Uh, and, yeah.
It reminds me, actually, when we talked about Totschke earlier, I forgot to say, no, not Totschke, sorry, Okayama. They seem to be playing an interesting system, which I think is called the one Yanagi.
Yes.
Two players called Yanagi, but only one of them seems to start and the other one goes on the bench. I'm not sure if that's the reason why they've started so well, but it's...
Sven Brodersen might have something to say about the reasons but why they're so strong defensively, but the Yanagi rotation might be one, might be another factor. I also think any time it's one kanji but has three syllables, it's good news for people like me who struggle with the old reading. So we need more of these easy, you know, easy to read kanji in the team. But I think on the Thiago Alves to Tokushima transfer, obviously they've had a pretty tough start to 2024, haven't they? And they've been, like you mentioned, I think last time, Daiki Watari is, I actually really like him as a player, but he can't do it all himself up front. So having someone who is shall we say more mobile and quicker to help him, I'm sure that transfer will benefit Tokushima a lot, as long as they can keep him fit.
Yeah, but it does suggest to me that since they've not bothered to do anything about their defence, their tactic for the rest of the year is just going to be try and outscore the opposition. So we might end up seeing quite a few 3-2s, 4-3s, 5-alls.
Well, none of these transfers that have gone through in the last couple of days are defenders, are they? Like you said, it's all, you know, everybody's like... you know, it's like putting my son in charge of the weekly shop at the supermarket. You just end up with a basket full of ice cream and gobstoppers, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk about the upcoming fixtures, match day 7. All the games are on Saturday the 30th. Most of them at 2 o'clock. We've got Kofu against Yamaguchi. Then Akita take on Iwaki. Yamagata play Shimizu. Mito face Kagoshima, Yokohama FC welcome Sendai, Tokushima play Gunma, next to that I've just written oof, Noita play Okayama, then at 3 o'clock Kumamoto play Jeff, at 4 o'clock it's Ehime against Fujieda, and then at 6 o'clock to round off the weekend, Tochigi play Nagasaki. Any of those fixtures catch your eye?
I don't know whether it's because we're finally, you know, we're 6 games in, so that the league table is starting to take a little bit of a shape, or whether this is a particularly, is just a good fixture list in general. But I think there are a few bangers here, and we should say as well, it's nice to have the kickoff time spread out a little bit, so we don't have all the games at 2 o'clock. There is, you know, fans will be able to watch sort of at least two or, you know, 1.5 games on Saturday. The games that I thought looked juiciest, James, were Yamagata against Shimizu. I seem to always be picking out Shimizu for these games to watch, but these are two teams that finished in the playoff places last season. So I think just based on sort of recent history, there's you know, some interest there. Yamagata have been poor since the first two games. They won the first two games, it looked like they were up and running, and they've been poor since.
So that's what really happened last year.
Yeah, so they really need, if they could get a result against Shimizu, that will go a long way to righting things, righting the ship there. I think Yokohama FC Sendai, again, pretty predictable choice because it's my local team. But these are two of the top defences in the division after 6 rounds. I think it's Okayama, Sendai and Yokohama have only conceded 2. So far. So Yokohama FC is strong defensively and not that great going forward, despite what the 4 goals against 9-man Kagoshima might have you believe. Sendai have drawn the last 3 0-0, so it's obvious to see where they'll be looking to improve. That could be an interesting game, I think, in the sunshine with the cherry blossoms out as well in Mitsuzawa Park. I think oof, you say oof and I say I raise you big boy football. Tokushima against Gunma, it's second bottom against bottom. It's two teams where I don't know if Gunma have actually been embarrassed by anybody this season. They've had quite a few narrow defeats, I think. Tokushima obviously had the hammering against Kofu and have looked pretty poor. But again, that was the only thrashing they've had, really. And this is going to be a very tense game. And I think whoever loses, the manager is going to want to keep his phone off for at least a couple of hours after the final whistle, I think. But yeah, what about you, James? What about the round seven slate?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning Akita against Iwaki, the kind of Tohoku teams. And Iwaki are unbeaten in their last six games in all competitions, which is fantastic. Seem to be having a lot of fun. Seem to be, although they didn't score against Yamagata the other day, but they seem to have found their scoring boots over recent weeks. Mito against Kagoshima, two teams that are really struggling at the moment. Kagoshima had a very bad week. Mito have had a bad few weeks. And the other one I'm interested in, Tochigi against Nagasaki. I wonder if Tochigi, they've got three wins from their last five. Can they stifle Nagasaki the way they stifled Oita? And Nagasaki's attack is better than Oita's. Mm. So those will be a sterner test.
Mm. Yeah, Matthias Jesus will take a lot of stifling, won't he, in midfield?
Yeah, well, and then there's Edgar Junior up front, and then there's Juanma up front, and then there's Marcos Guillerme as well. That's just the foreigners. I mean, they've got talented Japanese attackers as well. Asahi Masuyama is pretty good, and so it's going to be a test for Tochigi's defence. And I think that's going to be an interesting one to round off the weekend. Now that I think will do. Thanks, John. It was good to catch up.
Yeah, you too, James. And just for any listeners who are wondering why we didn't try and cover all, 20 games from Wednesday and Sunday, because we would end up just talking about highlights or describing goals. So we tried to pick out games that we thought were interesting or eye-catching. I've been trying to tweet out a sort of, quick summary of the round after each game. I might end up moving that onto our Discord server in the next few weeks, but I will at least post that on Twitter so that people know that that change has happened. But any games that we don't talk about on the pod, we will try and round them up in social media form in some place. But good to talk to you as always, James.
I'm glad you reminded me. The Discord server is open, and if you want to come and chat about Japanese football, the invite link, I've pinned it on my Twitter, and so have a look at that. It's quite a nice little community we've got, because Twitter is awful, and we won't get into that because it's very late, late at night, and also too late for Twitter. Yeah, thanks, John, and thanks everyone for listening, and thank you for people to download and retweet and share and all that stuff. Thank you, of course, to people who support JTalk Pod and JTalk Extra Time on Patreon. We're very grateful for that financial support. Don't go anywhere, because here comes Magic Mike Innes with all the latest from J3 in JTalk Short Corner. JTalk
Extra Time. Hello and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that covers all things J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this packed episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in rounds 5 and 6 of the J3 season, as well as previewing the round 7 matches coming up this weekend. To begin with a sprint through the full slate of 10 round 5 games on Wednesday the 20th of March. Leaders FC Imabari suffered their first defeat of the season in the home match with FC Gifu. Two early Yuya Taguchi goals won the game for the visitors. First, powering in a header from a cross by Ryoma Ishida, then sweeping in another Ishida assist with a composed finish. Final score, Imabari 0, Gifu 2. There were away draws for the three teams leading the chasing pack behind Imabari. Another goalless encounter for FC Osaka, this time at Giravance Kitakyushu. A 40-yard blaster against the bar from Osaka's Takuya Akiyama. The closest either side came to a goal. Final score, Kitakyushu 0, Osaka 0. Azul Claro Numazu snatched a late point at Tegevajaro Miyazaki. Tegevajaro missed several chances before Keigo Hashimoto made it 1-0 with a low shot on 25 minutes. Azul Claro's Kengo Kawamata slotted in the equaliser with 2 minutes left. Not great defending here. Final score, Miyazaki 1, Numazu 1. And Omiya Ardija's 100% record ended via their draw at SC Sagamihara. An incisive finish from Kazushi Fuji, putting Omiya ahead shortly before half-time. Justin Toshiki Kinjo tying things up for the home side just before the hour when he lashed in a loose ball from 25 yards. Final score, Sagamihara 1, Omiya 1. Towards mid-table, FC Ryukyu Okinawa maintained their unbeaten start with a home win over YSCC Yokohama. A Yu Tomidokoro header put Ryukyu in front. Haruto Shirai made it 2-0 after a YSCC defensive mishap. Koji Okumura pulled one back with a late penalty. Final score, Ryukyu 2, YSCC 1. And three teams achieved their first wins of the season, most notably Katare Toyama in the Hokuriku Derby at home to Zvegan Kanazawa. The decisive goal coming 19 minutes from time, rising star Shosei Usui finishing well after a neat pass from Takumi Ito. Final score, Toyama 1, Kanazawa 0. First win too for AC Nagano Paseiro, who fell behind at home to Fukushima United due to a sharp finish by Ryo Shiohama. With the snow falling hard, Kensei Ukita's drive squirmed under Kenshin Yoshimaru to make it 1-1. Kyoji Kutsuna curled in an 89th minute winner. Final score, Nagano 2, Fukushima 1. And also a first win for Nana Club. Thai under-23 international Patrick Gustafsson opening his account for Nana to beat Vanrare Hachinohe at Roto Field. And he did it in style. The only goal of the game, a volley from the edge of the area after a chest down by Shota Yomesaka. Final score, Nana 1, Hachinohe 0. Matsumoto Yamaga returned to winning ways at home to Iwate Gruja Morioka. Tsubasa Ando scoring the only goal early in the second half, drilling in from close range after Iwate had failed to clear a corner kick. Final score, Matsumoto 1, Iwate 0. And finally, another draw for Kamatamare Sanuki, who went in front at Gainare Tottori via Nina Tominaga's finish into the top corner. The hosts pulled level on 88 minutes, Mio Tsuneyasu's sliced shot turning into an assist for Yuta Togashi, who jabbed it in at the far post. Final score, Tottori 1, Sanuki 1. Then on Saturday the 23rd, there were two round six games. Omiya brushing aside the challenge of Miyazaki to complete a Kenyu Sugimoto-inspired home win. This one was over by half-time, Ardija taking an early lead when Sugimoto combined with rookie Yusuke Shimizu to open up the Tegevajaro defence, Riki Amotegi scoring with an angled shot. The second on 25 minutes was painfully easy, the visitors doing nothing to prevent Yosuke Murakami from moving forward and setting up Katsuya Nakano, whose cross was glanced in by Sugimoto, his first for the club. It was quickly followed by another, a penalty awarded when Kazushi Fuji was flattened by Tegevajaro keeper Kokoro Aoki. 3-0 at the break, though the away side did pull one back 14 minutes from time. Keigo Hashimoto's unorthodox volley somehow eluding Takeshi Kasahara at the near post. Final score, Omiya 3, Miyazaki 1. Tetsu Nagasawa successfully rotating his Ardija squad and maintaining a blend of youth and experience. For Tegevajaro's Yuji Okuma, problems everywhere he looks. His team still await their first win. At Hanazono, Osaka and Matsumoto shared the points and the red cards in a bad-tempered, rain-affected game. Osaka had the better of the first half but couldn't get on the score sheet. Yamaga had Kazuaki Sasso sent off just before the break for a, to my eyes, reasonable challenge on homekeeper Tatsunari Nagai. After the restart, the hosts continued to threaten, but Takumi Akiyama and Seigo Take both had goal-bound shots well saved by Shoma Kanda. The visitors offered little as an attacking force, although big defender Takato Nonomura did hit the post with a trademark towering header from a corner, while the hosts had Akiyama red-carded late on for a sliding challenge on Kaiga Murakoshi. Final score, Osaka 0, Matsumoto 0. A third straight goalless draw for the Sky Blues, even if they did everything but score. The Ptarmigans scrap their way to a point. Which left 8 games for Sunday the 24th. Imabari entered the weekend top of the table but come out of it in 5th after they were beaten at home by Kitakyushu. For the visitors, this was their first league win of the season, and it came about by means of Rinpei Okano's first J-League goal. Early second half, the home defence was still in the changing room. None of the 8 Imabari players in and around their own goal area could stop Ko Seung-jin's low cross making its way to the far post, from where Riku Kobayashi knocked it back for Okano to finish. Final score, Imabari 0, Kitakyushu 1. 2 home losses in 5 days raises questions about the early season momentum of Toshihiro Hattori's side. Kohei Masumoto's Giromance deserving of the victory with their best performance to date. At home to Ryukyu, Numazu picked up their 4th league win so far, a late goal again crucial. They almost took an early lead, only for Kenshiro Suzuki to hit the post from Takumi Tsukui's cross. And then, at the other end, Kenta Watanabe pulled off a stunning save from Ryunosuke Noda's point-blank volley. But Ryukyu went ahead on 26 minutes, Sho Iwamoto nodding in Takeshi Yoshimoto's cross for his first J3 goal since 2017. The lead lasted only 5 minutes, Azul Claro pulling level when Kotaro Tokunaga's corner was headed home by Suzuki. Both teams then missed chances to go ahead, but the home win was sealed in the 89th minute. Manabu Saito sending in the cross, Kengo Kawamata's header blocked by keeper Yuji Rokutan, Takuya Sugai hammering in the loose ball. Final score, Numazu 2, Ryukyu 1. Masashi Nakayama has his team set up to fight, but on their day, as here, they're a side of no little ability. A first defeat of the season for Kim Jong-song's Ryukyu. Staying in the hunt are Gifu, for whom Kosuke Fujioka was a hat-trick hero in their home game against Iwate. Fujioka struck as early as the 6th minute, a clinical drive from the edge of the area following Yuya Taguchi's flick. Dreadful defending here from Guruja's Tsuyoshi Miyaichi. Fujioka almost made it 2 in first half stoppage time, a snap header drawing a sharp reaction save from Takuo Okubo. But his second goal duly arrived on 58 minutes, a penalty awarded for handball against Maya Sako, desperately trying to keep pace with the home side's new flying winger Daigo Araki. And the hat-trick was chalked up 11 minutes later, a low shot from 25 yards that somehow squeezed between Okubo and the post. The Paper Cranes' late and, in all honesty, undeserved consolation came about in freakish style, a counter-attack which put Sota Kiri through on goal, his shot saved by Shu Mogi, only to strike Gifu captain Yoshihiro Shoji and rebound back over the line. Final score, Gifu 3, Iwate 1. Fujioka will get the headlines, but this was a strong team performance from Gifu. I should mention too, Mun Inju, a late substitute here, and indeed for North Korea against Japan on Thursday. Guruja struggling, still looking for their first win. J-Talk Extra Time. In bright sunshine over at the GoGo Curry Stadium, Kazuyuki Toda's Sagamihana tasted defeat for the first time in the league as Kanazawa continued their recent improvement under Akira Ito. The only goal came on the half hour. Keisuke Oyama's corner flicked on by Yusei Toshida for Yuki Kajiura to score his first J-League goal. Zweigen keeper Itsuki Ueda almost gifted the away side an equaliser, but Bruno Santos rolled the ball just wide of an open goal to the disbelief of his colleagues. And Kajiura almost made it too late on when his shot beat Motoaki Miura but clipped the outside of the post. The visitors ended the game reduced to 10 players. Yushi Hasegawa shown a second yellow card when he pulled down Masaya Kojima. Final score, Kanazawa 1, Sagamihara 0. Ito has changed the formation and half the team since the opening games of the season, and the impact is clear as his side move out of the bottom six. Sagamihara greatly improved in defence, but potent in attack they are not. The day's four other games all ended in draws, and we'll start at Hachinohe, who went 1-0 up at home to Nagano in the 8th minute. Corky Miyazawa sending in the cross, Oriola Sunday heading it on, Daiki Yagishita finishing from a tight angle. Paseiro pulled level with an absolute thumper from Kensei Ukita on the half hour, latching onto Naoki Sander's pass and given space by a hospitable home defence to manoeuvre into position and crash it in from the edge of the box. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Nagano 1. 2 points dropped by Vanrare, who despite their on-paper improvements over the winter, haven't got it right on the pitch. A distinctly fortunate fourth draw of the season for Paseiro, seemingly heading for another year in mid-table. Sanuki are now on draw number 5, the latest coming at home to Nara. The Noodle Boys were yet again chasing the game, falling behind on 21 minutes through a 25-yard screamer from Kei Ikoma, one of those shots that's still rising as it hits the back of the net. Much off-target shooting ensued at both ends, Kamatamari finally pulling level in injury time, a Yohei Ono penalty awarded when Yudai Okuda was wrestled to the ground by Yudai Sawada at a corner kick. Final score, Senoki 1, Nana 1. A worry for Kamatamari being their draws have generally been against teams in mid-table or lower, which serves very well to describe Nana, not so far pushing on from last season as hoped. Another team to equalise late on were Tottori in their game at YSCC. The home side had the better of things early on and went ahead in the 20th minute. Yasuto Fujita's ball into the box, causing panic in the visiting back line, the ball bouncing off Sota Higashide as he misguidedly sought to help out in defence, enabling Onye Ogochukwu to touch it over the line. Having offered nothing going forward, Gainare nevertheless grabbed a point in injury time, ex-YSCC defender Kei Oshiro rising high to head in a corner by Makoto Fukoin. Final score, YSCC 1, Tottori 1. The home side still looking for their first win of 2024. Gainare appear to be pretty limited, but even so are now unbeaten in 4. And finally, Fukushima and Toyama played out a goalless draw at the Toho Stadium. Fukushima coming close to breaking the deadlock when Kotamori clipped a shot onto the post, and then when Yuto Matsunagane's angled shot brought a smart save out of Toshiki Hiro. Final score, Fukushima 0, Toyama 0. Shuhei Terada's Fukushima continue to offer cause for optimism, but it didn't quite happen for them here. Katare only have a single league win so far and are not looking like promotion contenders. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 6. The top 6 are Omiya with 13 points and a game in hand, Numazu and Gifu also with 13. Then it's Osaka and Imabari with 12, Matsumoto 9. And down at the other end of the table, the bottom six are Sanuki with 5 points, Kitakyushu with 5 and a game in hand, Hachinohe 4 and a game in hand, YSCC 3, Iwate 2 and a game in hand, and bottom of the table with 2, Miyazaki. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 7 fixtures over the weekend, when there are 4 games on Saturday the 30th of March. Second placed Numazu go to Nagano. It's 4th against 5th as Osaka take on Imabari. Sagami Hana are at home to Sanuki. And Ryukyu play host to Toyama. 6 games then on Sunday the 31st, when leaders Omiya head down to Kitakyushu. 3rd place Gifu are also away. They make the trip to Matsumoto. Can Kanazawa continue their climb up the table as they visit Nara? Big game at the bottom of the table at Iwate, where the visitors are Miyazaki. Fukushima play host to YSCC. And finally, Tottori are at home to Hachinohe. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.